You are listening to The Pilgrim on the 405 with Will Crist. Join him as he and his guests discover how businesses thrive in California.
Well, welcome to The Pilgrim on the 405 on this kind of gray day here in Southern California. We have a very interesting guest today. Kevin Brown is the co-founder of and CEO of a technology startup. And so we're going to talk about what it is to, how do you go about starting? How do you go about creating an idea and then implementing it and taking it to the next level? Because he's having a lot of success. So welcome to the Pilgrim on the 405, Kevin.
Thanks. Well, it's great to be here with you today.
Good. So tell us a little bit. Now, did you grow up in California?
I did. Born and raised in Long Beach.
Oh, my goodness. You're one of the three people.
Yeah,
right. Right?
Yep.
Okay. So tell us a little bit about this LeadSmart. And first, tell us what it does, but then I want to go back and find out how you got started with it.
Yeah, it's kind of a fun story. I'll tell you briefly about the product to start with. So LeadSmart brings together a series of business solutions into one suite of products. So we have a CRM or a customer relationship management system that's tied directly with a marketing automation tool. But the third leg of the stool is what really brings the magic to our product, and that's what we call a channel management or channel collaboration tool. Depending on whose statistics you look at, between 70 and 75% of businesses sell or get their products out through some type of a channel partner. That might be a rep, a broker, an agent, distributor, dealer, a network of resellers, and so forth. And additionally, about 80%+ of goods and services that go out into the marketplace in general are through some type of a channel network. One of the biggest challenges that people have is managing that network. Once a lead or a business opportunity moves outside of the so-called firewall of your business, it typically goes into a black hole. In fact, there's research from Forrester and Gartner both that less than 1% of sales leads ever turn into any type of revenue, and 70% of them actually never even get followed up on. So LeadSmart takes a lead, takes it through preparing it to be a sales-ready lead through marketing automation, and then now we have an automated system that manages that out exterior network. There's really no systems that are built together that can do that and that are done in a price-competitive manner.
Well, that sounds very interesting. I've got some clients that I want to introduce you to who are living in that channel world, work through distributors. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if they call them channels, but they are if they're working through a distributor, right?
Right, exactly right.
And they've talked about the difficulty of being transparent both ways.
Yep.
Transparent to see who, in fact, the leads are that the channel partner, the distributor, is working on. And then being transparent back to the distributor as they see it moving through the whole fulfillment process.
Exactly right. That's the biggest challenge. And I've spent 25-plus years of my career battling that problem and joined up with a couple of gentlemen to solve it.
Oh, good. All right. So startup. Go back, just roll the movie back and take us through. Everybody's fascinated with startups and how you come up with an idea and how you execute it.
Sure. So my background is in distribution. So I'll tell you a little bit about all three of us if I can. There's three co-founders of the product. And, you know, I don't probably look like the typical startup co-founder these days either, but I've been doing this a long time. So my background is in product distribution and started out in the industrial world and have been on all levels of the distribution network from the distributor standpoint to a manufacturer's rep or a manufacturer's agent for a number of years, then invested in a manufacturing company in the early 2000s. And now I was the guy spending all of the money going to the trade shows, having my national and international network of distribution and watching these leads and my business not grow to the level that it should because I couldn't collaborate. For about the last 10 years, I've been doing some both advising and some investment work, including with one of my co-founders, and we're continuing advising companies by getting products into the market, setting up their marketing and their sales operations. Everybody's struggling with the problem. So we ended up doing some work with a wonderful Australian client as a manufacturing company, and we had been building the product kind of in the background. One of my partners, we had done a number of CRM implementations together over the years. So I brought the three together, We had all, one of my co-founders, which is a whole story in itself, my co-founder Tom Burton, we've been friends since kindergarten, and that's a long time ago. And so we were raised together in Long Beach. I don't use the term grown up because we haven't identified where that will happen yet. But Tom's background, my background, so sales, marketing, and distribution, business development. Tom's background is in computer science. He's, you know, old school coder, but he's also developed multiple other software companies, had multiple exits, has run the business side of it before. And then our third co-founder, who just I'm expecting to see his plane coming in momentarily because he's landing, coming into town this morning, Steve Snapp. Steve has a deep background, 20-plus years in Salesforce automation, contact management, which is a term we used years and years ago, and then CRM now, right? So he's lived that whole thing. So when we brought this team together, started talking about the challenges and the problems, we said, you know, it's time to go build the product. If someone would have asked me 2 years ago if I wanted had any interest in investing in and being involved in a CRM startup, I would have said you're out of your mind because there's not a lot of redder oceans out there that are more competitive. But when you start putting together solutions that bring business outcomes, that's what intrigued me with what we could go do, hence the development of our company.
I right now know a number of startup companies, and I don't even know if you call them startups anymore. I mean, essentially what I'm hearing from you is you saw a problem, and you made a commitment to solve it. And it's the same thing with a couple of other companies, and they're and all of them are built on the Salesforce platform.
Right.
I think Salesforce has just become a standard way of working in sales and marketing world.
So you're exactly right. And so if I can, let me address that before we go too much further with that related to Salesforce. And that's where Steve really comes in into the picture because of his background and experience as my co-founder and good friend and business partner. Is Steve not only has the background in working in that arena, but Steve has a relationship that he's been able to transfer into our company with Salesforce.com. And Salesforce has what they call, it was originally called their Force.com development platform. It's run on their Apex system to not get too complicated. And with that, they allow a very small group of companies around the world to actually go develop. Now, you and I could use Salesforce, go into the App Exchange every day, download tens of thousands of apps that will enhance our Salesforce experience. That's different than what we do. We're a standalone software company where we actually sell the seat licenses, generate that revenue for us, and our reseller partners get to make seat license revenues from that as well. And our product, though, has that backbone of Salesforce. And interestingly enough, there's a couple pieces of research out there, but I read one the other day. The Salesforce platform is the number three software development platform in the world now, which will shock a lot of people.
It doesn't shock me. Yeah. I mean, number one has got to be Microsoft.
Well, so from a, when you start talking, we're talking about coding type development platform. So there's a number of languages and so forth. But the ease of coming in and developing apps and products on, it's the number three in the world right now.
Who are the other two?
I knew you were going to ask that.
Of course.
Yeah, I'll get back to you. I literally read it last week, and I went straight to their portion of it.
So. Well, all right. So let's think about. I mean, this whole notion of startup just gets very, very fuzzy for me.
Sure.
When you saw a problem, who was the first one of the three of you to see the problem?
I'm going to answer that in two parts. I've lived the problem my entire career.
Right.
We
at some point, you decided it could be solved.
Well, I had solved it before in a, I'll call it a cobbler or cobbling solutions together with Steve. Tom and I had done some other work over here. Tom and Steve had actually met a number of years ago. I brought us all together knowing someday we would do something together. It's one of those relationships that you just, I'm sure you've had them before, where you just know these people need to know each other besides us knowing each other. And and through that, the person that said, now is the time, was Tom.
Okay.
And Tom truly saw that.
All right. Now, when you guys agreed that this was the aha moment, what was next? Was it whiteboards? Was it Slack? Was it what did you do next?
Yeah, so great question. There's an interesting scenario with our organization. I live in Laguna Niguel. Tom lives in Santa Barbara. Steve lives in Los Alamos, New Mexico. Mm-hmm. He moved a number of years ago from here in Orange County. So we didn't have that quick and easy ability to just say, let's meet tomorrow. So we got started literally with phone calls using Zoom. Yep. I think we started with Skype and then quickly kind of migrated with Zoom.
So, and you use Zoom video.
We'd use Zoom video and we'd bring together. And at the time I was officing from home as Steve was. Tom had an office in Santa Barbara.
I mean, it doesn't matter where you office.
Doesn't matter.
Right?
Not one.
I mean, then I was officing from home. Now I am, officing from, what's my address now?
Yeah, right. I think you're exactly right. The difference for us was in that point is Tom was the one with the big whiteboard.
Okay. All right. So now, when you did that, did you use Zoom whiteboard?
No, we didn't.
A camera on somebody's whiteboard?
Yeah, we've done that a lot over the time frame. And then what we did is as things scaled a little bit, not from a business growth, but from the process, then we started scheduling regular meetings where Steve was coming into town. We all flew to Phoenix another time. Tom's office was very helpful in Santa Barbara.
All right, so when you met...
Yep.
Did you meet in front of a whiteboard?
We live in front of whiteboards. Okay.
Well, I mean, this is important.
It is. My entire office wall is a whiteboard now.
Okay.
And yes, I mean, it's...
Is it a painted whiteboard or a stick-on?
This one is a stick-on.
All right, so you unrolled it.
But it's a full wall.
Yeah.
It was done for me.
You rolled it on, stuck it on.
Yep.
And now it's sealing the floor.
It is.
All right.
And it's full.
Well, and isn't that an important thing to say to people? Because you can have the eye, you can have see the problem,
mm-hmm.
and the first step is to see the problem, and then to decide that it's possible to solve it.
Right.
I mean, if you don't, then you just choose to live with it.
Well, and I think I'll take a step back in answering that because I think you bring up a really good point. So for our, I'll call it genesis, was we had done something similar as I mentioned by building solutions. We were putting something together for a key client. Good friends, worked with them for years, and we needed to put all these pieces together truly in a true piece of software. Tom had that aha moment. What kind of happened next is we whiteboarded some things out roughly. I then sat down with PowerPoint and some crude PowerPoint skills, and I took a customer life cycle flow from the idea that says we start off with a lead, whether we generate that lead at a trade show, digital marketing, whatever it is, and we took their life cycle through where they became a customer, and now they went back into our system and are managed as a customer.
Mm-hmm.
And so now our full CRM system takes over. So we mapped that, and once that mapping took over, then my partners, the really smart guys, kind of took over and said, okay, now let's start building that architecture. And then the whiteboards got really crazy with stuff that sometimes is hard for me to understand.
Well, yes. And I want to suggest is it doesn't have to do so much with intellect. It's got to do with a different set of mindset,
yep.
skill set. And what Kathy Colby would call just a different character.
Yep.
And the people that is so important to kick off this idea, she calls fast starts.
Okay.
I mean, these are people like me who jump in the deep end of the pool mm-hmm. and learn how to swim on the way down. I mean, we were talking about how we got the podcast started in 2010. And what literally Paul Roberts and I did was I said, here's my credit card, let's go.
Mm-hmm.
He said, go find some people.
Yep.
And I said, we'll be on next week.
Wow.
And I had no idea what to do,
sure.
right?
Yep.
But that's a fast start.
It is.
That's absolutely required to solve a problem.
Yep.
And after that comes fact finders, and you can probably identify one of mm-hmm. your partners as a fact finder says, well, that's well and good, but what are the specific things about that, and how is that going to work? And then you also have follow-through. Somebody is going to follow through. For me, I never follow through. Without my assistant, who was just a gift from God mm-hmm. 2 years ago, we wouldn't be on the podcast today. I'd be waking up 3 months from now saying, you know, I really want to have Kevin on the podcast, but why didn't I do that?
I would like to suggest I wouldn't have a product if there wasn't those people.
Right.
So, right. And that's how it's beautiful you say that because that's how our team plays out.
Mm-hmm.
And as I'm a sales and marketing biz dev guy. I understand the software really well. Power user,
mm-hmm.
but when it comes time to clicking the stuff behind the screens or writing lines of code, not that guy.
Mm-hmm.
Steve is, our development external development team is. Tom is, but Tom has also done much of what I've done. So we have this, I describe it as kind of the world's perfect Venn diagram of the three of us. And where we meet in the middle, there's some great overlapping skills. But then we all have these other strengths. And I describe it to people all the time. I don't think he likes this, but I describe this all the time about Tom is the guy that executes on my commitments.
That's right.
But,
that's right.
He's really good at
That's absolutely right. And what that really means is you have these four characters that Kathy Colby talks about. And the fourth one, and we talked about fast start, we talked about fact finder, follow through, and implementer. And the one, the implementer is the one that creates the program, creates the whole thing for how it's going to go. And at some point, as you begin to sell this, somebody has to implement the campaign.
We're doing it now.
There you go. Yep. And you know, and that whole notion that, the Colby brings to you, it's not like DISC. Or it's not like a Myers-Briggs assessment. It's not an IQ. This really tells how do people work together. And if you don't have all four of those around, you can be hobbled.
I think you're exactly right. And I think what we start with, what I would call our core, is there's three partners that have a very high level of integrity. And a very large commitment to each other. I could tell you some great stories from early on in the development of our corporation and our true business partnership of some phenomenal things that we kind of did for each other through that. And but when you're working with people of integrity that are highly skilled and committed, that's where you get success.
Well, and what I'm hearing is that you guys identified what your values were.
Absolutely.
And that is so important to companies, even from the beginning, is to get really clear and articulate their core values, agree upon them, and then that becomes who you hire.
Right. Well, in our case, we were really fortunate because, as I mentioned, this lifelong relationship I've had with Tom, I knew everything about him. Right, that and vice versa. Steve, I've had a business relationship and a friendship with for about 15 years now. So when we came into this, we had a very solid idea. I don't think, for me, there's been no surprises. And we're a year into this now through our development process and beta testing, and now having launched a couple months ago. So we're in a really good spot, and because I think everybody knows what to expect from each other, including strengths and weaknesses, right? We know where we need to pick up for the other one, and vice versa. So that's been a big benefit for us. And you know, I don't even want to think what our cumulative age is, but Tom and I are in our 50s, and Steve's in his 40s, so we have a lot of life experience that goes with that as well.
Well, and you know, nobody expects you to follow through, right?
Everybody expects me to follow through.
Well, I mean,
or at least my team to follow through.
Well, that's what, but not you personally.
Yeah.
And when you don't, they don't come down on you for it.
Oh, as an organization?
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean,
and we're a team.
Well, I mean, and the team means we have different roles to play.
Yep.
And so that follow through person is probably not going to come up with the deep insight, the fast insight into how to solve the problem or how to move forward.
Right.
And you don't wait around for that. You just spit it out there.
Yep.
And getting really clear on what those characterizations are, I think, is really important at the very beginning of how we're solving the problem.
Very true. Very true. And I think that's one of the values of knowing the people and having a deeper relationship than just as a side note, it kind of astounds me. I'll be looking sometimes at, I have done some work for many years with a seed stage capital and incubator group in Silicon Valley called 500 Startups. And through that, I might be in the Angels List website or Crunchbase or some of these different things of technology startup arenas. And you'll see people coming up and they say, I've got a great idea and I'm looking for co-founders. And I look at that and that just baffles me that you would basically, it's like saying on Craigslist, want to work together? Now, there's hugely successful companies out there, but I think when you have that baseline that you can start with of understanding strengths and weaknesses, and I described that Venn diagram earlier, know where we come together and know where I have to rely on you here or you over here, that's where I think some really neat things starts to happen. That's kind of where we've been in the last few months has really come to clarity as we've launched.
All right. So you've identified the values simply because that's what you have been doing over the long-term relationship. What about your have you guys talked about what your real passion is?
Yeah, it's interesting you say that. We all are men of faith, and so put some time and energy outside of our business life. Mm-hmm. All of us are married with families mm-hmm. that we're very focused on, and so we weigh those things very heavily in everything that we do. We're all of different faiths, but we're very respectful of that and the time that goes with that. Mm-hmm. And so I think long term, all of us we're at a place in life where I don't think any of us are saying we're going to do 5 more startups. I have some things, personal things in my life that I would like to do from a volunteer mm-hmm. standpoint, but I love working. So I think all of us are kind of at that spot. If we were still in this business in 5, 7, 10 years, we'd be happy as could be. Mm-hmm. If we had an exit from the business, we have other things we'd like to do, including other investments and so forth, because we've already all done that before.
Well, so for the business, what's the purpose, the cause, or the passion for the business?
Yeah, so that's a great point. You know, at the end of the day, and this is a really interesting comment, and I heard and it's been on my mind a lot lately. In the third quarter earnings report recording for Salesforce.com, their co-founder, but most people think founder of Salesforce, Mark Benioff, made a comment. And he said, you know, people are looking for business outcomes. They're not looking for software. Mm-hmm. And that's what we believe Lead Smart is. Mm-hmm. Lead Smart brings what we use the phrase lead to revenue, mm-hmm. right? And that's critical to us because the world doesn't need another piece of software. I'll tell you a really quick side note to that. I was at a software conference in San Francisco of software executives last month. And it was a small group, about 250 over 2 days. Pretty much everybody met each other. I probably missed 10, 15 people there that I didn't get a chance to meet and talk to for a few moments. I was at the airport in San Francisco going through security, and the guy in front of me says, "You were at SaaS Connect, weren't you?" And I said, "I was." And he goes, "We didn't get to talk."
Whoa.
We get through security. We start talking. I tell him, you know, the nanosecond description of Lead Smart, CRM, marketing automation, channel collaboration. And a half hour later, as we're kind of winding down to go to our gates, he's like, "I knew this would be an intriguing conversation or it would have been over in 15 seconds. Mm-hmm. And I said, "Why is that?" And he said, "Because you started with the word CRM. And this was either really compelling or there was nothing to it and I was moving down the road."
Right.
And we believe in the product.
Okay.
Right? The product solves a problem, and if it didn't, we wouldn't have done
it. So it sounds to me like your passion is to solve the problem of how we take these leads through and manage them through channels.
Right.
So what is the niche then? What companies are you there to help?
You know, it's interesting you ask that, because in my background is the traditional kind of manufacturing, everything from, you know, hard hats to cables and walls to, you know, electrical, electronics, industrial safety products, environmental products. That's where I've spent my career in. The people that make something have a network that they sell through. It's typically a dealer, a distributor, as you were talking about. And in that world, they don't use that phrase, as you mentioned earlier. They don't use the phrase channel that mm-hmm, often. Mm-hmm. That really comes in the technology world, but right. It's exactly what it is, right? It's a third-party seller. Mm-hmm. And so our niche, and in my early on, I was just thinking, that's it. Now, there's, you know, millions of manufacturing companies that could mm-hmm. use our product. But then as we started developing our channel partner program ourselves for our VARs and resellers, mm-hmm. we realized, wait a minute, every technology company that uses value-added resellers, MSPs, ISVs, and so forth that sell through a channel need our product as well. So we're actually starting some campaigns moving in that direction. Mm-hmm. In fact, we've got a webinar related to that in the middle of May.
So is there a particular size of company that you
work with? Yeah. So we have a 5-user minimum. Mm-hmm. The sweet spot for us, we believe, as we're just kind of getting started now with a handful of customers only right now, is probably 15 to 50 user company mm-hmm. that has dedicated sales and marketing people and that are managing their external partners and struggle with that. Now, that could very easily, because we're seeing it from conversations, that could be an enterprise-type company that has 1,000 users and is having the same problem. What we're focused on, and this is a little bit self-serving, is we want, ideally, early phase. We're looking for those companies that their senior executives feel the pain still within that business. So that might be a $5 to $7 million a year company. It might be a $150 million a year company. But there's still people that are decision makers that understand the problem and need to see it solved.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The entrepreneurial company.
Right. When you get that's maybe good phrase. When you get into a large enterprise sale, you've got layers of IT, you've got layers of capital expenditure analysis, and it's not that the product's not right. It's we're looking to move fast.
Oh, that's right. That's right. And I mean, for me, working with entrepreneurs using the entrepreneurial operating system, I mean, our target market is 10 employees to 250.
Right.
And that's a place where the founder, the owner, is feeling those pressures.
Right.
And in fact, EOS is often. I mean, generally, those people are visionaries, and EOS has often been described as therapy for visionaries, right? Helping them to build a team, a solid team they can depend upon, like you already have.
Yep.
And all right, so you've identified your core values. It sounds like you have a pretty good handle on what your purpose, your cause, your passion is, and you got clear picture of your niche. Now, the discipline is going to be hanging on to that and not getting drawn off by all the shiny stuff over here, right?
Every day.
Yeah, that's right. So that's important to keep that. Now, so what's your long-term, 25-year, 10-year, what's your target?
My 25-year is being alive.
Okay, well, all right, okay. Well, I can promise you that in today's world, you're 50.
Good. 50, 25 almost
years?
55.
Well, that's easy.
Yep.
You just got to take care of yourself, right? All
right.
So what's a 25-year, what is it, 20-year, 15? What is your long-term goal, the big goal for your company?
For the company, literally to every day add, and this sounds super cliche, but every day add more value to help people grow their business.
Well, yes, so, that's a good one.
So that's a starting point.
Yeah.
Right? So I have a little thing on my wall in my office. I have a stand-up desk facing the whiteboard. So I lose a little bit of space here. Behind my monitors, I'll tell you what's there.
Yep.
Because my partners don't know this.
Okay. We'll
turn it. That's right. They can, if they choose to listen to this, they can. One of them is responsible for getting this out to all of our social media channels and so forth. So hopefully he listens. There's a little thing there that says, and this is just what's going on in the back of my head.
Mm-hmm.
There's just, it's about this tall. There's a 1. There's a 10. And there's a 30.
Mm-hmm.
And the 1 is 1,000 users.
Okay.
The 10 is 10,000 users. The 30 is 30,000 users, obviously. Right. And that is the mindset that I have going on. And this is the business side of it, not the what the product does. Mm-hmm. But those are the scaling points that I'm tracking that allows us to do a handful of things, right? That allows us at that 1,000 user point, which will be too fairly quickly, that the business is self-sustaining at some level. And we can, because we're self-funded. Bootstrapped startup, which is the value of us having had some business experience. We've been able to do that, which is a great piece to not be reliant upon, whether it's angel investment or venture capital or private equity investment. We can make decisions that we believe are right.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would say we're better at providing adult supervision to other people than we need, although we need coaching here and there. But that takes us to that spot. At 10,000 users, we're scaling really fast. At 30,000 users, we could be acquiring companies. We could be acquired. That
so
takes
when
us to
do you want the when do you and your team want that 30,000?
So I'm looking at that within the next 24 months. That's my big
so
goal.
So let's suppose you have it 24 months. Then what? I mean, what do you want to do with this?
Well, that I think it's. In frankness, that's a good question because you know what? It's we've not talked about that. All of us are open to continue to run the business, and all of us are open to being acquired in the right scenario.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think any of us would be interested in just being acquired to be acquired because we all of us believe in what the product can do, and we see other things that we can continue to build on the product to enhance it. And help businesses continue to grow. So I think at this stage in life for all of us, no matter how you slice it, you have to be prepared to look at an exit.
Well, yes, prepared. I understand that. Mm-hmm. 10 years from now, can you look out there as a team and imagine what you want it to be 10 years from now?
Yeah, I would be shocked if we owned the business in 10 years.
5 years from now? Yeah.
5 years, I can see us 100,000 users potentially, mm-hmm. and offices in, I mean, this is, you know.
No, go ahead.
Potentially global offices, and mm-hmm. I say global, mm-hmm. a European office, Latin American office, mm-hmm. Potentially an Asian office, and scaling to that level. And then the question would be at that stage is, do we need to be in the ERP business? Do we need to be in other types of, mm-hmm. of facets? And how do we grow from mm-hmm. there? So mm-hmm. from me personally, I wouldn't expect to be around then because there's mm-hmm. a lot smarter guys that we could get running the company mm-hmm. that could mm-hmm. scale to that level. Probably 20 million or so a year in sales. I'm probably looking at a CEO coming in and me taking mm-hmm. a step back. Mm-hmm. I have a lot of volunteer work that I do currently within mm-hmm. my faith, and that is somewhere I'd like to find a way to put more energy
Good.
Into.
Good.
So that's for my personal goals. And my partners are kind of in a similar spot. Mm-hmm. We would love to continue to scale, but we also recognize that there's people that have done this before mm-hmm. that we would bring into the organization fairly quickly as we scale.
Right, right. So do you have a clear picture of who your target market is right now?
Yeah, as far as a user of our product?
Yeah.
Yeah, we talked about that a little bit briefly. It's that mid-size SMB.
But do you have a list?
Of companies? I absolutely do.
Good.
Yeah. No, right. We have very targeted... so we've done some really kind of unique, I'll use that overused phrase, guerrilla marketing. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And as a bootstrapped company, we're very fortunate. Mm-hmm. I have a pretty solid knowledge of digital marketing. Mm-hmm. Tom has a deep expertise of the science behind digital marketing. So we've been doing some really neat things with acquiring some large lists. I've got a background in some specific markets that I've worked within, which some of our current customers or clients are from. And so, yes, we have literally thousands and thousands of targeted companies, and they're siloed into mm-hmm. likelihood of success and or what their value
so
would be.
So what are the three uniques that you have? What are the three things that set you apart from any competitor in the marketplace?
So we've built a suite of products, so we don't have products that we're trying to have talk to each other mm-hmm. as first. We've streamlined and made our product much easier to use. So we use the phrase Salesforce. We've talked about them a few times today, but Salesforce is the big gorilla when you talk about anything CRM related. So us being built on their platform, we're part of their ecosystem, they're wonderful family members to have. But if you and I were to go out tomorrow and start another business and we decided to go buy licenses for Salesforce, we get usernames and passwords and good luck. Mm-hmm. And what does Alt Address 7 on this screen mean to you and I? So what we've done with our product is we've streamlined it. We put workflows and processes that we customize for each user as part of their startup process with us. We call it a quick start. And so we've taken the best of CRM, the best of marketing automation, and then new pieces of channel collaboration to build this suite together. So we've really refined the product, mm-hmm. and we've done all that on kind of the third piece that makes it easiest to talk about is we've done all that at a very reasonable price. Mm-hmm. You get everything we do for less than you'd pay for Salesforce.
Wow. Okay. All right. So let's see. It would be kind of one-stop shop.
Suite of products.
Right. And number two was
we've refined
simple.
It. Yep.
Make
simple
it simple.
Simple to use, refined it.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And the third is a lot less expensive yep. than even if you were just going to use Salesforce.
Right. Exactly
not even counting other.
Forget about if you were thinking about HubSpot or Marketo mm-hmm. or other mm-hmm. marketing automation components. And what's interesting about it is we haven't talked a lot about this, but I'll address it briefly, is when we talk about this whole channel collaboration issue mm-hmm. of talking back and forth and collaborating with these people that you write checks to every month, right, mm-hmm. To be a part of your business channel, is with that, there's really not a lot of ways to do that. And the vast majority of business, including enterprise, large, hundreds of million-dollar companies, are still doing that by spreadsheet.
Yeah, I know.
Right? Or they're going out and spending $1,000 per partner on these huge PRM or partner relationship management products, right, that nobody understands how to use. So unless you have a channel manager mm-hmm. and a channel marketing team, using a PRM is really difficult. Mm-hmm. What we've done is we've, in each category of our product, CRM, marketing automation, and channel collaboration, we've scraped out the stuff that makes day-to-day business operations, and we turn leads to revenue and those leads end up being customers, and we have longer lifetime value of the customers because we're able to collaborate across the channel.
Excellent, excellent. All right, so now think with me. Do you have a guarantee?
No.
No guarantee.
Mm-mm.
I jump into it and I'm on my own.
Yeah. No.
No?
We don't have a guarantee. I haven't even really thought of that because everybody that's used the product so far has done so well through their Quick Start program. What we do instead of that, and it's interesting you bring that up, maybe it's something we should think about, some type of a guarantee, but we don't give you usernames and passwords until you're ready to start using the product. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So with our Quick Start program that takes anywhere from 2 to 4 weeks, and we bill for that as well, But anywhere between 2 and 4 weeks, and if it's longer than two, it's because the client is delayed in data. Mm-hmm. We've taken all of your data. We've learned your business model and your process, your nomenclature, and we've refined the system through this Quick Start program that when you get, I describe it, when we hand you the keys to the Ferrari, the seat's already adjusted for you. Your radio stations are pre-programmed. Mm-hmm. You know, we've taken the governor off of things so you can go as fast as you want, as opposed to somebody buying the traditional, any type of software that you're going to buy.
Right.
Good luck.
Well, all right. So now I've rarely seen somebody use the guarantee, execute on it. But what I see that is valuable for the guarantee is when you have a new market,
right,
when you have a new product, when you have a new process, and in your case, you said you had a handful. So I'm one of the handful. You're practicing on me, right?
Well, we've been practicing for a year.
Well, that's but you're practicing on me. That's okay.
Okay.
But what if it doesn't work? I mean, that's got to be in the head of somebody.
Sure.
So to me, the guarantee, what it does for the buyer is it says you're not risking. You're not having that big risk. That's what that guarantee is to help somebody get across that chasm of disbelief.
Yep.
And I see lots of companies who never thought about the guarantee, and when they think about it, their initial thought is, oh, we're going to get bound into something, we're going to be difficult, it's going to cost us something. Yep. The reality is it doesn't cost them because generally the company is absolutely ahead of any problem. But it does help with the sales in the marketing to say, we have a guarantee.
Right. One of the dilemmas that we have with that is we sign an agreement with Salesforce for every seat license that we have for a year. So once we get somebody started with a product, we would eat that license fee. But I think that it's a really interesting point that you make. To do something, maybe the word's not guarantee, but maybe there's something similar to that would be of value to. And I thank you for bringing that up, because certainly something we would look at doing if it would help a customer.
Well, I mean,
because we're not going to let somebody fail.
Well, that's a guarantee.
Yeah.
That's a guarantee. Right. I mean, I have a client in Ohio, and when we talked about that, what they were saying was that their competitors were always underselling this, a construction company. Mm-hmm. Their competitors always underselling them in terms of the bid, the initial bid, but then they would come in with change orders and push it up.
Mm-hmm.
And their guarantee was, you will never
have a change order.
Have a change order without something. You know, they talked about how to do it, but we're not initiating the change orders. That was their guarantee.
Mm-hmm.
For EOS implementers like myself, there's 250 of us around the world right now, and our guarantee is absolutely clear. You don't pay us until after the session, and you don't pay us unless you found value. I mean, we know what the session fee is.
Sure.
There's no contract. It's a 5-session-a-year for 2 years program, but you don't pay us ahead of time, not invoicing you. You come with the check, and at the end of the day, you didn't get value, don't pay us. Now, rarely has that been used, but if I'm sitting there thinking I'm going to pay a whole bunch of money for this session, what if it's no good?
Mm-hmm.
Are they going to laugh at me? So, all right,
we'll take that back to the team, because that's a good thing to discuss.
Well, it's good. So this is, you know, we're not going to have time today, but I'd love to hear what your 3-year picture looks like.
Okay.
And really start painting that in Technicolor for you. All right, so What would you like to say? Because, like you said, you have one of your partners is going to take the responsibility for getting this shared digitally. So, your turn. You got the microphone.
Well, I think when I look at businesses in general, if you're a business owner out there that's hearing this today that literally struggles with turning leads into revenue and managing the data that's you're faced with, you need tools that bring value and that truly bring outcomes. LeadSmart is a product that brings outcomes. We do webinars regularly. We're happy to do one-on-one product demonstrations, walk people through the product. But companies today struggle more and more and more as the noise around them of technology happens to really take advantage of business outcomes and growing their business by having real data available to them. And LeadSmart does that from a CRM, marketing automation, and channel collaboration. We bring all those pieces together in something that's easily managed at a reasonable price, and somebody should take a look if they're having those challenges.
So, and maybe that's part of your guarantee.
Sure.
We bring you results.
Yep. It's outcomes that people need.
So how will they get in touch with you?
So it's really, really simple. info@leadsmarttech.com. You can find me, Kevin Brown, LeadSmart Tech, by Google search. You and I together are on LinkedIn probably more than we should be. So I'm very, very active there. And we'd love to talk to anybody, either myself or our team. Reach out directly.
Great. I'm so glad that we had the time together, Kevin. This has been really helpful and interesting to hear how a company, what you might want to call a startup, but sounds to me like it's really a problem-solving machine.
It's our goal.
There you go.
Thanks.
All right. Excellent. Well, this has been a wonderful experience today, and it's the Pilgrim on the 405. So glad to be able to talk to you and to share with others about how to have a business in California that thrives.
Been listening to the Pilgrim on the 405 with Will Crist. To hear more of the programs in this podcast, go to www.willcrist.com.